Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. The Democratic primary race is a lot tighter than you might have expected a few months ago. Bernie Sanders is pulling up very close to Hillary Clinton in Iowa and is ahead in polls in New Hampshire. Her national lead in polls is substantial, but this race appears to be neck and neck in its key opening rounds. It's a big choice for the Democrats. We want to hear directly from the supporters of each. This hour, On Point, we've put together a roundtable of Clinton and Sanders supporters to hash it out right here. You can join us on air or online where this conversation is always on. What does the party need? What does the country need? Democrats, Republicans, what do you see in this battle? Hillary and Bernie. Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. With just 14 days yesterday until the Iowa caucuses, there they were in South Carolina last night. Hillary Clinton saying there's no daylight on the Wall Street front. Something needs to be done.
There's no daylight on the basic premise that there should be no bank too big to fail and no individual too powerful to jail. We agree on that.
But Bernie Sanders saying easy to say, but I would do it.
It's easy to say, well, I'm going to do this and do that. But I have doubts when people receive huge amounts of money from Wall Street. I am very proud. I do not have a super PAC. I do not want Wall Street's money. I'll rely on the middle class and working families for my campaign.
We're going to go to our full panel in just a moment, but joining me first from Charleston, South Carolina, is Alex Zeitzwald, where he's been watching the Democrats. He was at the debate last night, political reporter for MSNBC and NBC, covering the Democratic side of the presidential race. You can read his latest stories at our website, onpointradio.org. Alex, welcome back to On Point. What did you see last night?
Thanks for having me, Tom. Well, I really thought this was the best debate, the most contentious one so far. It was really the debate that I think we've all been waiting for and we knew was coming, but previous debates have been sort of overshadowed by outside events. There was the Paris terror attack and then that data breach on the Democratic side. This was the first time we really stripped away the noise and got to the core issue at this primary, which is, do you want continuity or do you want revolution? Pragmatism versus idealism, you know, head versus heart, however you want to put it. Sanders encouraged supporters to think big. Hillary Clinton talked about details. She made pleas for pragmatism, for her ability to get things done. And in the larger context of the race, with him really closing in on her in Iowa, I think this is a win for him on sheer passion, on intensity. You know, Mario Cuomo said you campaign in poetry and govern in prose. Hillary Clinton was speaking in prose. Bernie Sanders was speaking in poetry. It's exactly what his supporters want to hear. And it was really the first time that we've seen him go toe-to-toe with her on the debate stage. Debates typically are very much her terrain. She's done a lot of these. She went, I think, 26 times with Barack Obama in 2008. But he was very prepared, very commanding. The terrain was his issues, income inequality, Wall Street reform. And, you know, if you read the transcript, you might think that Hillary Clinton won. But on stage watching it, I think it was clear that it was Sanders' night.
Martin O'Malley up there as well, but struggling to get into the conversation last night and quite marginalized at this point in the polls. Could you see Hillary Clinton responding to these very much tightened polls with Sanders actually ahead in polls coming out of New Hampshire?
Absolutely. I mean, you know, her campaign has been struggling to figure out how to respond to this. They've really become much more aggressive in the past 2 weeks, going after Sanders on health care, on Wall Street, on a whole host of issues and sharpening their tone in a way that I don't think they really wanted to be at this point in the race. You know, some people on their campaign will say that they saw this coming for a long time. I've even heard her aides say that they had the date January 15th circled on their calendar for when this was going to tighten. But there is more than a little bit of panic going on inside her campaign headquarters in Brooklyn and among donors, supporters, and they don't really understand what's going on here, which is the scariest part. You know, it's not like that email controversy that we had this summer where there was a clear cause to what was causing the drop in the polls. This is much more mysterious. And on the ground, there's this huge intensity gap that they don't know how to address. There's so much enthusiasm for Sanders, less for Clinton, still plenty of support for Clinton, but they're not sure how to, especially with young people, how to turn that around in their favor.
Revolution versus evolution, the choice, as you described it in your piece today, Alex. Where did you see the biggest policy daylight last night between Sanders and Clinton?
Without a doubt, healthcare is the marquee issue in this debate and sort of perfectly encapsulates that philosophical difference. Sanders, just 2 hours before the debate, finally rolled out the details, details might be a bit charitable, but rolled out a more a stronger look at his single-payer healthcare plan. He's been campaigning on this the entire election. He's made this a centerpiece of his platform. Hillary Clinton responding to that by saying it's unfeasible. You know, essentially, she says, I live in reality, and Republicans in Congress are never going to pass a single-payer health care plan. The Affordable Care Act, Obamacare, is an amazing achievement. We should defend it. And she says she doesn't want to plunge the country back into a divisive issue. So there you have it. You know, do you want the purity, the idealism of a single-payer health care plan, which is what Bernie Sanders is supporting, even though the details are not really there, even though how you implement it has not really been explained? Or do you want what Hillary Clinton is saying, the more pragmatic approach, saying, you know, what we have is not great, but we can make it better? The problem for her is that's not a really inspiring message. Even if the facts are on her side, it's hard to get people fired up about details when you have Bernie Sanders offering sweeping, fundamental, very exciting changes for the Democratic primary base.
And Hillary Clinton saying last night, but be realistic, and we've got to work with Obamacare.
Even when the Democrats were in charge of the Congress, we couldn't get the votes for that. So what I'm saying is really simple. This has been the fight of the Democratic Party for decades. We have the Affordable Care Act. Let's make it work.
We've got a lot to look at in this hour. And Alex, I'm so glad you're here. But let me introduce our panel. We have two Clinton supporters, two Sanders supporters, and phone lines with lots going on. We have, joining me in the studio, right with me, right here, Colton Williams. He's from Derry, New Hampshire, a supporter and volunteer for the Sanders campaign. 24 years old, a sergeant on active duty in the New Hampshire National Guard. He's studying political science at the University of Massachusetts at Lowell. Colton, thanks so much for being here.
Hey, Tom. It's good to be here.
It's great to have you right here. With us from New York City is Rita Schwartz. She is a Hillary Clinton supporter volunteering at Clinton campaign headquarters in Brooklyn. 75, a widow, mother of a daughter, a son, a grandmother of an 11-year-old boy, used to work in city government in New York, volunteered for Hillary Clinton's 08 campaign, this time around working phone lines and training volunteers. Rita Schwartz in New York, thank you so much for joining us.
Hi, Tom. It's a pleasure to be here and speak for Hillary.
Other side of the country, Seattle, Washington, Linda Sutton joins us, a Bernie Sanders supporter, volunteer from Port Townsend in Washington State. She's been hosting debate watch parties, organizing caucus precincts in her county, manages two Facebook pages supporting Sanders. 68 years old, married, mother of two daughters, soon to be a grandmother, retired middle school history teacher from Los Angeles. Linda Sutton, thank you for joining us today.
Hi, thank you, Tom.
And last but certainly not least, our second Clinton supporter is Trey Capers from Hopkins, South Carolina, just outside Columbia. He's pastor at Zion Benevolent Baptist Church. Voted for Hillary Clinton in 08, has met both Bill and Hillary Clinton several times. 34 years old, married, father of four, joins us today from Charleston. Pastor Capers, Trey Capers, thank you very much for being here.
Thank you so much for having me, Tom.
All right. Rita Schwartz, you're sitting right there in Clinton headquarters in Brooklyn, and you hear Alex Seitzwald with MSNBC saying Bernie dominated last night, and he's got the passion going for him. What do you say?
Oh, I'm not sure that I would agree with that. I don't think he dominated. I think he postured a fair amount, but I, you know, we work as Hillary's ears. And when phone calls come into us and people ask, can I talk to Hillary? Straight out, can I talk to Hillary? Well, no, but I can take a message. And we do. We hear what people are saying, and they're saying, help me with small issues. So they can't get grandiose. People are frightened of getting too big, too strong.
I mean, that's great, fantasy. But look at the polls. He's neck and neck with her. He's ahead in New Hampshire. What do you make of that, Linda, Rita?
I don't really believe in the polls. I was with Hillary in Iowa, and I was with Hillary in 08. I've known her for a long time. This is a woman with heart, with brains, and she doesn't need on-the-job training. She is probably the most sophisticated, bright woman I know. And I know a lot of bright women.
Rita, stand by. I want to get Colton Williams in here, young supporter of Bernie Sanders. I'm sure you watched last night as well, Colton. Alex says Bernie Sanders dominated. There's this question that Hillary Clinton raises of what's realistic, what policies can really be implemented. And I think, you know, the other theme that the Clinton campaign uses is who can really be elected beyond Iowa and New Hampshire. What did you see last night? What are you thinking on the prospects for Bernie?
So last night I saw a great bunch of candidates up there speaking their minds, and as opposed to, you know, what's actually electable, you know, that's not sort of the conversation I'd like to engage in. Bernie got up there. He definitely had he was very fervent, very intelligent, spoke fluidly, and he kept speaking on the real issues again and again and again, instead of preying on old wounds, on sore subjects. And I really think he did a great job doing that. I think that's what people respect.
And clearly a lot of people are sharing this view that's showing up in the polls in Iowa and New Hampshire. But, you know, what's actually electable will be very important come November. What about that?
I don't think what is actually electable is a – I don't want to say – dumbing it down, it's not a good conversation to have. You know, is he 35 years old? Yes. You know, was he born in the United States? Yes. He can be elected. You know, the polls say he's doing great. He is doing great. He represents a, you know, a massive demographics view that want to elect him and make him, you know, the prime citizen to represent us.
He's way more than 35, of course, but he meets the minimum wage. Trey Capers, 35 is right in your age territory. You're a Clinton supporter. Bernie Sanders was reaching out to African Americans last night. Is he speaking to you? Why are you on the Clinton side of this fence, Trey?
Well, I heard him, and I absolutely appreciate the efforts historically that he's done for African Americans being a young black man. But I think that the needs are much more comprehensive than the past. Absolutely, we honor the past to carry the future. But there are some real issues that African Americans are facing right now that need to be spoken to a bit more clearly. I think that Hillary Clinton has a better shot at relating to the African American community because of not just her history, but her present activity in it.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour with Hillary Clinton supporters and Bernie Sanders supporters. Roundtable here about the Democrats' big battle, why they're lining up for Hillary or Bernie, and the big choice Democrats are about to begin to make in Iowa, in New Hampshire, and then right on across the country in the Democratic primaries. You can join us this hour. What's the heart of Bernie Sanders' appeal, of Hillary Clinton's appeal? Have you watched the debates, the debate last night? What do you see unfolding here? What do you make of the polls where they're neck and neck, Bernie ahead in New Hampshire? We've got young Colton Williams with me here in the studio, 24 years old, Sanders. Trey Capers with us, 34, out of Charleston, South Carolina today. Clinton, Linda Sutton is with us from Washington State, Seattle today, Bernie Sanders supporter. Rita Schwartz with us from Brooklyn, actually out of the Clinton headquarters where she's working there, Clinton supporter. Alex Seitz-Wald is with us from MSNBC. He covered the debate in Charleston, South Carolina last night. Moderator Lester Holt pointed out that Clinton is beating Sanders more than 2-1 among minority voters, and he asked Bernie Sanders how he expected to win the nomination without the support of more African Americans.
When the African American community becomes familiar with my congressional record and with our agenda and with our views on the economy and criminal justice, just as the general population has become more supportive, so will the African-American community. We have the momentum. We're on a path toward victory.
Sanders last night, Hillary Clinton conceding nothing on support from minority voters and more, and wrapping herself more than ever in last night's debate around President Obama and that close connection, saying on the gun policy front, need to stick with the Obama line. Here she was.
We need a president who will do everything in her power
to protect President Obama's actions on gun violence, and we'll go even further.
Hillary Clinton on gun violence, but you can also hear her on gender right there, a president who will do everything in her power. Let's go to our panel. Linda Sutton in Seattle, you're supporting Bernie Sanders, but you hear Hillary Clinton right there making that appeal. She's held that torch for a long, long time. It's time to put a woman in the White House. And, of course, it's not just about gender. She goes right ahead to talk about policy. But she makes clear, and the audience makes clear, that gender is important to her and to those who are applauding right there. What about that factor in your decision, Linda?
Well, I'm a same-age woman as Hillary Clinton, and I have been a clear Bernie supporter since day one. This was clearly Bernie's time last night. The entire focus on the stage was on him and his positions because the polls show him to be really ahead in the early states. Momentum is surging nationwide. And because he has a message that galvanizes enthusiastic voters, both the Democrats, independents, millennials, he talks clearly about the issues that are most relevant to people's lives. And people are responding. People hear him talking about the issues and his that he's set since the very beginning of his campaign. They're clearly articulated. There is no ambiguity in his positions. And people like that. People like that. And I have really been a supporter for quite a long while. And I'm very happy that he's running. And we have this specific choice this time around.
Linda, let me ask you. The word realism comes in here a lot from Clinton supporters and from Republicans. We heard John Kasich say in the Republican debate last week that if any of the Republicans face Bernie Sanders in the general election, he expects they will win all 50 states, that Bernie Sanders would not take in the general election a single state. Do you worry about this potentially being a quixotic campaign?
No. If you saw some of the immediate feedback last night, you had the Google searches that were they mm-hmm. talked about. Bernie was the purple color. Bernie had every state in the nation was doing Bernie searches last night. If you looked at Time Magazine's online poll, which we know isn't scientific, but it is there, he was at 86%. So the idea of when people hear his message, they respond, they do, because he strikes a chord within us all of things that we want, which our Congress hasn't been giving us, which our presidents, you know, and Obama has tried very, very much during his time in office, and he's made some significant achievements. But there are things that are very important to the people of this country that have not been addressed and which Bernie speaks to. He gives the big idea. He has the passion, and people respond to that big idea. And I think that Alex's characterization at the beginning was very true. I really liked his analysis of the debate last night.
I mean, you would. Sanders supporter, and he says Bernie was dominating last night. Rita Schwartz sees
yes,
it otherwise. We'll come to Trey Capers on that. Colton Williams, there was a time when the label socialist, democratic socialist or otherwise, was sort of the political kiss of – a long time was the political kiss of death in this country. Mm-hmm. Now we see polls out of Iowa and elsewhere saying, well, maybe people just aren't that paranoid or upset about that label anymore, at least the people in those polls. What about that? Do you worry that that becomes a stumbling block down the road? You may like his analysis, but when he puts it under that mantle, does it work for the party in the general election?
I absolutely think it works for the party, especially since, you know, when we the sort of demonism of the word socialist, you know, came in a Cold War state. It was used to label people. And we're moving, you know, progressively, you know, we're labeling. You could stop doing that and get into the minutiae of it. I mean, we have a ton of active socialistic things in the country already, you know, USPS, Social Security, you know, we pay into it. We all buy out. So I don't think the label that is mantling whatever his details are mm-hmm. is going to affect it, or should it.
And your fellow peers in youth in their 20s, do they look at that word and say, oh, my gosh, you know, run for the hills? Or
we don't even talk about it, to be honest.
Alex, what are you seeing in the polls, Alex Seitzwald? You're following this interesting development, I assume, on how people are dealing with this label.
Right. Well, there was a really interesting poll in Iowa recently that asked people this question, asked Democratic voters, and a surprisingly large number, something like 40%, said they were okay with it. I do think it's sort of lost its punch that it once had. where it would be just absolutely toxic to be labeled a socialist not too long ago. I do think it's fading away. I don't think that it necessarily helps Bernie Sanders by any means. I know there are lots of people around him who would love it if he would stop calling himself a democratic socialist. But the fact that he sticks with it kind of speaks to what a lot of people like about him, which is that even when the polls say it might not be a smart thing to do, or when the professional political consultants say it might not be a smart thing to do, he does it. He sticks with it because he always has, because that's what his belief is, that's what his passion is. So if you're turned on by that kind of continuity and that the standing on principles, then I don't think you really care one way or another whether he calls himself a socialist or not. You like the fact that he's sticking to it.
Rita Schwartz, you're there at Clinton headquarters working away. Do you see
yes.
this label as a stumbling block to Democratic Party victory in November, or do you see a country moving beyond, or a party at least, moving beyond that now as a labeling issue?
You know, people are not talking about labels, particularly when they call into us. They're talking about themselves. They're talking about their own problems. Sometimes they're saying, what is Hillary really like? Particularly women are asking, why is she wearing red? Why is she smiling so much or not smiling so much? It becomes very personal. People care about who she is, what she's talking about, what is reality. I would say that Bernie was a bit bombastic last night. He has a one note. His experience certainly is very specific, certainly not as encompassing or ready to take on office as Secretary Clinton's is. I also would add that just yesterday I participated in a Martin Luther King program. I don't know, but that there was not one African-American in the room, and it was a church filled. That was not a Hillary supporter who came up to me and asked, how can I get involved? What can we do? We need her. We want her. And this was a Judeo-Christian event that we had in Brooklyn. Hillary appeals to people who have real concerns about their lives, about the safety of the world. She's there. She's ready.
Is your crew freaking out? Alex says there are some in the Clinton campaign kind of panicking over these numbers. We've seen a fundraising message that came out from the top of your campaign saying, hey, maybe the sky is falling here. We need your contributions now. Look at these poll numbers.
The sky is open. I don't see where the sky is anywhere near falling for Hillary. She knows who she is. She's a strong, honorable woman. She has leadership, she has experience, and most of all, she has heart. And Bernie shows a lot of heart, but he doesn't show the experience and the leadership qualities behind it.
Well, he's certainly been around a long time. Trey Capers, stand by there in Charleston. I got a caller from Charleston as well right here at the top of this pile. Scott in Charleston, South Carolina. Scott, what do you see in this race?
Hi, Tom. I'm a Martin O'Malley supporter, and I'm really glad I got through to you here because I don't know if Martin O'Malley's name would have actually been talked about in your discussion.
It has been raised, but only briefly. He's so far down in the polls now. What do you see at the top of this battle?
I believe it's a chicken and the egg situation. It's sort of, I was joking even last night after the debate that if you're playing a drinking game and drank every time Martin O'Malley talked, you'd be as sober as a Mormon.
You would. You would be very sober indeed.
And here's the frustration. If I look back to 2004, okay, it's yep. very easy to see Howard Dean's people or Bernie Sanders' people. And then, you know, sort of Hillary Clinton has the establishment, the John Kerry sort of side. But there was room for a John Edwards, which is where a Martin O'Malley sort of middle ground can play in. Also, amongst the three, he's the only one that has been an executive.
Why are you sticking there, Scott? There must be something bugging you about Hillary, something bugging you about Bernie. What?
No, I consider myself a pragmatic progressive. So I like Hillary, of course, like anybody who has dreamed of great liberal policies and, you know, would like what Bernie's saying, even though it's not practical. That's why I'm a pragmatic progressive. And that's what I see in Martin O'Malley, because I am a Maryland. I'm calling from Charleston, but I'm a Maryland resident. And I saw what he did in Maryland.
What's the problem with Hillary then, Scott? If Bernie's not practical, by your assessment, what's the problem with Hillary Clinton? She's practical, isn't she?
I was a Bill Clinton's presidency was a fine presidency. I just feel that if you're a married couple, that's you are a one team. And this is a third term for Bill Clinton. And I, again, between Bushes and Clintons, I don't believe we live in an oligarchy, and love to see some change out there. So, I mean, I'm much more of a Barack Obama fan as a president than a Bill Clinton. And I think Martin O'Malley is much more closer to Obama policy than to Bill Clinton policy.
Scott, we've got it. Trey Capers chime in there, also in Charleston, South Carolina. A Hillary administration would be a third term and maybe fourth for Bill Clinton or the Clinton family. And you hear your fellow Charleston participant here saying, enough of that already.
Well, I think there's a bit of a difference between principle and practice. And to that end, you see similarities between the Clinton administration and the Obama administration. Mm-hmm. From my vantage point, I don't see the problem with it, because by most accounts from a Democratic standpoint, President Clinton had a very effective 8 years, President Obama the same. And if Secretary Clinton is ascribing, as she said on numerous times last night, in some spots to mirror the same efforts that President Obama has, you know, my question is, what's the issue? When I heard Bernie Sanders speak on a number of occasions last night, some of the things that he brought out as principle were quite different from his practice, one of which being gun control, especially here being in the city of Charleston. Senator Pinckney was a dear friend of mine since I was a mm-hmm. teenager. And Secretary Clinton didn't really shy away from addressing Bernie Sanders' voting record, called him out on it, even as it relates to health care, you know, how his policy changed some 2 hours before the debate on last night. I think that there's one mindset to adopt, and it's yet another one to put it into practice.
But what about the argument from some Sanders supporters that Hillary Clinton is just too tied to the status quo, including the status quo maybe on Wall Street?
In relation to that, it's because her scope is more comprehensive than his. I mean, she's worked a lot longer, has been in more circles, and she even acknowledged last night relative to, I think it was the Dodd or something to that effect.
Dodd-Frank, yeah.
Dodd-Frank, yeah. Talked about that briefly last night. And when you're in more circles, it means that you've been exposed to a bit more. You know? And I don't see anything negative to be drawn from it.
Let me go to Lauren in Lewis, Delaware. Lauren, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I used to be a Hillary Clinton supporter. I worked for her campaign against Barack Obama, but I am voting for Bernie Sanders. What bothers me about Hillary Clinton is her ties to Monsanto and what they've done to our food and our environment, and she seems to be just as big business as most of the Republicans, and I think it's time that our government gets back to the people. There's nobody lobbying for the American citizen. They're lobbying for businesses, and they've just got a hold of our government.
What about in your peer group, Lauren? Is your view common, or are you the odd one out?
Not at all. I'm a gay woman in a very Democratic state, and very few of my friends, they're all Hillary supporters. We're very, there's a few of us.
But you're breaking from the pack right there, and we hear you want to sort of break through that status quo. I hear that, and I appreciate your call. One more, Kimberly in Waltham, Massachusetts. Kimberly, you're on.
Hi, Tom. Thank you for taking my call. Mm-hmm. I am calling because I got to see a bit of what's going on with Bernie's tax plan this morning. And although I am very much in support of higher taxes for the wealthier people in the country, I believe that this tax plan should be a serious concern for Democrats who are hoping to win this election.
Why?
As much as I think it's fair to have a higher tax, there are a lot of people who would consider a 37% tax on a $230,000 income to be a little extreme and radical. And I believe that goes both Democrats and Republicans. And I think that Bernie would be hung out to dry on a stage with a Republican candidate against him. I think they just totally seize on this, and that he would have a really hard time defending it.
But maybe people are ready to move. Maybe they're ready. Maybe Americans are ready for a different slicing of the pie, Kimberly.
I think that some Americans are, but I don't think enough are, and I think this would make some people take a step back and possibly just not vote, or even possibly choose to think twice about what party they're standing for. I just think it's really extreme. And if we can keep things a little bit more moderate until we get into the White House again, I believe that Hillary can take us there, and then things will start to happen.
maybe so. I can see Bernie Sanders supporters shaking their heads with some skepticism there. Kimberly, thank you for your call. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
This On Point podcast is made possible by Squarespace. If you have a passion that you obsess over, if it keeps you up at night, if you live for it, you should show it off. With easy-to-use tools and templates, Squarespace websites help you capture every detail of what drives you. Because if it's worth the effort, it's worth showing to the world. Start your free trial today at squarespace.com. When you're ready to purchase, use the one-word offer code ONPOINT to save 10%. You should. Squarespace.
Hi, it's Tom. With a quick heads up for you, be sure to stay with us to the end of this podcast for a sneak preview of Modern Love. It's WBUR's new podcast put together in collaboration with the New York Times. You may want to check it out. Thanks. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour with Hillary Clinton supporters and Bernie Sanders supporters about the Democrats' big primary battle, why they are lining up for Hillary or lining up for Bernie. Colton Williams is with me, 24 years old. He's in the New Hampshire National Guard. He's a Sanders supporter. Trey Capers out of South Carolina, a Clinton supporter, 34 years old, married, pastor there at the Zion Benevolent Baptist Church in Hopkins, South Carolina. Clinton, he says. From Seattle, Washington, Linda Sutton is with us. She's a Bernie Sanders supporter and volunteer from Port Townsend these days in Washington State, retired middle school teacher. And from Brooklyn, Rita Schwartz is with us, 75, and working for the Clinton campaign, volunteering there, and very active in her support for Hillary Clinton. Alex Seitz-Wald is here from MSNBC, and NBC has been covering the Democratic side of the primary race. Here was Hillary last night defending her Wall Street policy, wrapping herself around Dodd-Frank and President Obama.
President Obama's work to push through the Dodd-Frank bill was one of the most important regulatory schemes we've had since the 1930s. So I'm going to defend Dodd-Frank, and I'm going to defend President Obama for taking on Wall Street, taking on the financial industry, and getting results.
Right there with the president last night, a lot of side eye throughout the debate from Bernie Sanders. He, looking for maybe some of that African-American vote that's been widely presumed to be Clinton's, said when we have deaths in police custody, killings in police custody, bring in the U.S. Attorney General. Here's Sanders.
This is a responsibility for the U.S. Justice Department to get involved whenever anybody in this country is killed while in police custody. This should automatically trigger a U.S. Attorney General's investigation.
Alex Seitz-Wald, look beyond Iowa and New Hampshire. Those are up in the air right now. We don't know how they're going to go, but beyond that, is there a path for Bernie Sanders here?
It's a great question, Tom, and I think we should definitely keep this in mind as we spend a lot of time and attention talking about the tightening polls in Iowa, which is very important. Without a doubt, Hillary Clinton still has the clearest shot at the nomination easily. So after you move beyond Iowa and New Hampshire, which are both overwhelmingly white, we should also note that New Hampshire is right next door to Vermont, Bernie Sanders' home state. Then you come here to South Carolina, which is expecting something like 50-60% blacks among the Democratic primary turnout. Then you head to Nevada, where there's a large Hispanic population. And then on March 1st, Super Tuesday, a lot of southern states in the mix there, Georgia, Tennessee, Arkansas, which, again, you're going to have a predominant or large portion of non-white voters. Bernie Sanders has very much struggled to make inroads, especially in the African-American community, slightly better with Hispanics, but it is lopsided. Depending on the polls, anywhere from 70-30 to 80-20 black voters supporting Hillary Clinton over Bernie Sanders. He says that if he wins Iowa and New Hampshire, he has a good chance to have those people take another look at him. But you're not going to see, I don't expect, or we haven't seen any evidence to suggest that there'll be any kind of massive realignment in his direction the way that happened for Barack Obama. Once Barack Obama proved he could win white voters in Iowa, I think a lot of African Americans were willing to move to his side. He had proved that he could possibly win nationally. Bernie Sanders, you know, he might get another look. Younger African Americans might move over, but I don't think you're going to see this the same kind of massive realignment. So that's a huge firewall for Hillary Clinton.
When they get to know me, he said last night, speaking of African Americans, they'll come over, but it's a big hill to climb. Hillary Clinton, of course, aligning herself more and more last night with President Obama. Sean in New Haven, Connecticut. Sean, you're on the air. What do you think?
Hi, Tom. Thank you for taking my call. Two quick points. The first being that Obama's health care that he managed to pass, I feel it's a great success for Democrats and many other presidents before him tried to do it. And I feel like it's a little disappointing that candidates don't acknowledge that a little bit more. But also at the same time, I can't see trying to completely reinvent that after it's only been in place a couple of years. Should Sanders actually get elected? Obama was pretty centrist in my mind, and there was a complete refusal on the other side to work with him. So I can't imagine what it's going to be if he were to be in office. What the Republicans will or won't do?
Yeah, that's a tough knot right there. Let me take it to Linda Sutton in Seattle, and thank you, Sean. Linda, how about it, President Obama? Fairly centrist in many of his policies, though some Republicans might not describe them that way, but many would. And even at that, deadlock in Washington. If you put Bernie Sanders in the White House, and I hear your support and Colton's and many more for those policies, but is that a recipe for more deadlock and nothing getting done?
Well, Bernie Sanders has already proven himself able to work with in a bipartisan way with Republicans. The crowning achievement was his veterans bill that he did with John McCain. But I think that a bigger question is the whole discussion of single payer last night.
Mm-hmm.
The United States already has a single payer system with the seniors and Medicare and the military and TRICARE. Bernie's plan for single payer is Medicare for all, which until this election has really meant universal health care. He comes from a direction of expanding Medicare, an already existing a successful program on which I am on, by the way.
But it's one thing to go Hillary for veterans comes, benefits. Everybody's for those. You know, it's easy to make the
Hillary,
case. But if you go in there for universal health care or dismantling Wall Street, do you really think he can bring a Congress with him that has, at this point anyway, Republican majorities in both houses?
I think that we have the possibility in this campaign of having a really strong electorate come out to tell the Congress what the people want. And they certainly have come out and spoken very unfavorably about the present Congress. It is a matter of the people really coming out to vote and take back their democracy. And that's what this is about, that you have a lot of people that really don't want to have the for-profit health care, the for-profit insurance corporations dealing with their health care. And that's really where Bernie's opponent is coming from as far as dealing with health care. And this is one of the most important parts of his program, is the ability to move in that direction. Everybody knows that giving everybody Medicare for all isn't going to happen overnight, but it can start moving in that direction and having that. The whole idea of incrementalism and keeping the for-profit insurance corporations in charge of our health care is simply wrong. And anybody who has dealt with insurance companies knows that.
We've got it, Linda, aspiring to something more right there. The question of practicality or who can get it something through Congress hangs in the air, but I hear the aspiration. Casey in Atlanta, Georgia. Casey, you're on.
Hi, Tom. That's really my biggest concern, someone that can wrestle with this Congress. We know at best we'll have a mixed Congress, someone in the vein of a Lyndon B. Johnson. And I feel like in 2008 I voted on principle, and this time around I really just want someone who can work with this Congress or at least get stuff done.
So does that put you in the Hillary camp, Casey?
It does, yes.
The practicality argument right there. for Hillary, says Casey. Lisa, back in Charleston, where the debate was last night. Lisa, thank you for calling. You're on.
Hi, Tom. Thank you for taking my call.
Yeah.
I wanted to say that I think that the professional punditry in the DNC is really underestimating the energy on the ground for Bernie.
Enough to overcome the doubts, enough to line up a national victory, enough for the general election, Lisa?
I think so. I think definitely for the general. The primaries are going to be a little bit tough, but I really, there's a lot of energy out there for him, and I think that he's really speaking to everyday working people's concerns.
He says time for a revolution. Are you on board with that? Political revolution, he said.
Yes, sir.
Lisa's lining up and ready to go. We've got it. One more. I'll take it to our panel, Marcel, in Houston, Texas. Marcel, you're on.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my phone call. Mm-hmm. I just wanted to revisit something you guys discussed a little bit earlier regarding Hillary Clinton continually bringing up President Obama last night. Obviously, strategically, it makes sense before a black crowd in South Carolina. With respect to her specifically referencing past criticism that Senator Sanders has levied against the president, and I can understand those criticisms were from the left, how do you think Senator Sanders is going to respond to that sort of attack, given that obviously most of his support is from the left? A lot of his supporters probably were very disappointed that Obama didn't rule from a more leftist perspective with respect to being in office, and at the same time try to curry the votes with, when you look at a state like South Carolina, I mean, essentially he's going to have to get that black vote. And I know he's appealing to a lot of the young black individuals with the Black Lives Matter movement and so forth, but most of that Democratic primary vote aren't going to be millennial black voters. It's going to be, 35 to 65-year-old.
Yeah, and what's your question there, Marcel? Help me understand. What's your question there?
Well, how does Senator Sanders, on the one hand, continue to sort of be the attack from the left, the sort of establishment, which he's, Clinton stands for the establishment, but also President Obama stands for the establishment as well, and at the same time try to curry favor and attract votes with the bulk of those black Democratic primary voters who really have a strong affection for President Obama?
That's an interesting strategic question. Colton Williams, how about it? If he's going at establishment Democratic Party politics and that he's putting Hillary Clinton in that camp and she's wrapping herself around President Obama, does he drive black voters away?
I totally don't think he drives them away. I mean, that actually reaches back to what Trey brought up earlier, and that he really thinks that Clinton really supports minorities' votes, and he thinks that they're going to travel or gravitate towards Clinton. But if the media generally shows to the passive listener and watcher whatever they feel like showing, if you just take a bit, be active, do some research, then you can get a great objective view of where each of the candidates actually stand instead of what they get to say briefly on a stage. And that actually it keeps going into, Rita's when she brings up Clinton's experience, leadership and heart. These are buzzwords that all Democrats possess. It's all about how genuine these things are based on that, what I said previously of being an active American going online, doing your research. She supports, working with these big, almost amorphous entities that we can hardly comprehend.
Corporate entities,
okay. Banks, Wall Street. And it's actually things that we have a hard time understanding, but nobody can really control or work with these, in my opinion, these large globalized entities. And Bernie really represents the people on not bringing them down, not putting a leash on them, but simply tapping into their resources and bringing them back to the people.
He's talking about bringing some of them down. He wants to dismantle some of those very big banks. And it sounds like you're all right with that. Trey Capers, there is this sort of high fervor for big change lately, and that drives Bernie Sanders supporters. Can Hillary really tap that? Can she be both the pragmatist, the voice of continuity, and speak to this deeper hunger for change?
I mean, she kind of has been historically, and that's one of the things that has perpetuated my support personally. Said even with the tides of time has changed from the first time that she ran here nearly 10 years ago until now, the world around us and even politics and policy as we know it has been evolving, but somehow she seemed to stay relevant. Personally speaking, I was aware of Bernie Sanders before, but didn't really look at him as much more as a guy from the Northeast until he really announced his candidacy and I got to understand more about him. He didn't really pass the ear test. But now, you know, he's galvanizing, you know, this young movement. But as was already mentioned, for voters in my demographic, the 35 from the 65, we're going to go with what we know, with not so much which is trying to be established. We've got, not to trivialize it, but we've got adult issues that need to be taken care of. I'm married to Sally Mae right now as having higher ed. I've got a family
mortgage
to provide.
Central, for, yeah.
Yeah, I've got a mortgage. I've got health care costs that have to be reconciled. And I don't think that the presidency, no disrespect to even President Obama or Bernie Sanders, I don't think the presidency is a place that you would want to have on-the-job training. I think the difference between President Obama and Bernie Sanders is that there was a bit more substance in the Obama camp with his appeal that led him to be able to run through the primaries and then secure the presidency. I think that Bernie Sanders would have real issue getting through the primary. Should he get through them, the presidency is going to be a long shot, from my summation.
Rita Schwartz, Hillary Clinton gets credit from Trey for being level-headed, sort of go with what we know. How does she carry that voter and appeal to the Bernie Sanders supporters who want something more fiery? They want more change than that suggests.
Well, I object to the comment that was made about buzzwords. They're not buzzwords. That's real. Hillary, I watched her at 9/11 down at the Trade Center in the pit. This is a real person talking to people who were missing, talking about people who were missing, people who were sick, trying to fight to get health care for our first offenders. This is not somebody who talks about only grandiose issues. She's talking about real people and real needs. When she comes to the office, she talks to every intern. All these young people and volunteers who are so eager to follow her and to learn from her. And she talks about their college tuition and their student loans. We're talking about reality. She talked about Flint, and with great passion about her concern for real people in Flint, Michigan, who are being poisoned. There's passion there. She may say it in a calmer way. She's not explosive, but this is a lady who cares.
Linda Sutton, last word goes to you. You're for Sanders out of Washington State. Do you think you're going to have still that choice for you by the time the primary rolls to your state?
Well, we have our caucuses on March 26th, and everybody should note that here in Washington. Yes, I do. And I think that, you know, to sum it up, I believe, you know, all Democrats feel that they want a Democrat as president. And for me, I know that Bernie's poll numbers are now showing that he has the greatest percentage over Trump and all of the other Republicans, far more than his opponents. And for those people that are concerned and showing all the fear about what's going to happen, and if we had a Trump candidacy.
Go with Bernie, say. Linda, we're out of time right there. Linda Sutton in Seattle, Rita Schwartz in Brooklyn, Colton Williams with me in the studio, Trey Capers in Charleston, and Alex Seitzwald with MSNBC. Thanks to you all. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
Let's face it. When have you ever been in a relationship that's gone as planned?
Sometimes I think about the vows my wife and I made to each other 28 years ago, and we're different people than we once were.
And I don't even like him, I said, wiping my tears. He's a liar. I can't spend the rest of my life with him.
Being wheeled into surgery like this, alongside a woman in a sexy dress, pretty much screamed sex injury.
Modern Love, the popular New York Times column, is coming to you as a podcast.
There is no good way to tell a new guy in your life that you're going blind.
Between these two genteel Southern ladies, our family became an old West town. It just wasn't big enough for both of them.
Starring some familiar voices.
Hey, this is Emmy Rossum.
Hi, this is Jason Alexander.
Hey, it's January Jones.
Hey, it's Judd Apatow here.
Modern Love will make you laugh.
Is everything all right up there?
It'll make you cry.
I started calling hospitals, then morgues.
It'll make you think.
We can't keep calling you daddy, he said, if you're gonna be a girl. It's too weird.
I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and I'll be your host. Modern Love, the podcast, is a collaboration between The New York Times and WBUR, Boston's NPR station. Stories of love, loss, and redemption.
You're off the hook, I said. No guilt.
I love you. I love you too.
Modern Love, a new episode every Thursday. Subscribe today on iTunes and fall in love at first listen.